Warrior football. True Warrior football. True Warrior football.
You are listening to True Warrior Football Podcast with your host, Corey Kid Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Corey Kid Smith, and you have just joined me for what I feel like is going to be a truly great episode of True Warrior Football. Every episode I feel like is great. I always say that sometimes, you know, this next greatest, the next latest and best episode I put out. But this one I truly feel will be one that will be very special and one that will be very, very controversial, talked about for a while. But before I can really jump into the meat and potatoes of it, I have to address something that came out last week. You see, after I dropped last week's opening episode, and thanks again to Brandon and Logan, you guys were great for me, and that whole episode was great. Max Preps, high school website, talks a lot about high school athletics across the entire country. Last year, they rated us one of the top 10 programs over the last 15, 20 years or so. And I talked about that briefly. And last Thursday, they came out with a new article talking about the most dominant programs state by state across the country. You know, 50 states, talking about the top 10 most dominant programs and how they've been ranked and stuff like that. And so I was like, okay, let me take a look at this. But I looked at it, and they had a map similar to the map that Logan and I talked about last week that Indiana Preps had. It was a map of the country, and every state had a different logo, the top team. And the top team for the state of Indiana, our great state, didn't have a W on it. Didn't have a black or gold, but it had the had a C, a yellow C with a blue dog on it. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. That's very, very interesting. So I clicked on the article, and sure enough, it had Carmel being the number one most dominant team in the state of Indiana. But what I found was really funny is they used a picture of us saying us that we were the most dominant picture in the state of Indiana, the most dominant team in the state of Indiana. So I had to, you know, screenshot that, edit it, and put it out there for people to see. And people loved it. But, you know, it's really, and here how they, Max Preps, how they rank the teams and everything, and it's still kind of iffy for me, but it says teams were awarded points for top 25 finishes in their state. 25 points were awarded for teams that finished number one, 24 points for teams that finished number two, and so on. Top 25 rankings, national rankings, a number one team will get 50 points, 49 for number two, and so on and so forth there. And then you got 20 points for state championships, and then you have 10 points for state championship game appearances. And, you know, doing the math there, and they show Warren Central number two with three state championships in a 10-year frame. This is a time frame that said from 08 to 2018, but they really started it with the 2009 football season. So, you know, I was like, okay, let's go over this one time and really look at it. And, you know, we have three state championships, no state runner-ups. We have state top 25 just about every year. The lowest we were ranked to finish the season. Let's see. The lowest we were ranked to finish the season in the last 10 years was number 8. Now it's 2012. And that was just about it. Every other year we were 1, 2, 3, or 4. And then we were nationally ranked as high as number 7 last year. Or no, number 7, 2011. But see, they don't even have our 2018 season right there being ranked. I know we were one of the top 25 teams for sure last season. So that's an error on their part. But maybe that's how they ranked us. I need to go back and look on that. And going to Carmel, they have 2 state championships, one in 2011 and one in 2016. And then they have 1, 2, 3, 4 state runner-ups. And, you know, to me, when I look at most dominant, how can you be the most dominant when you get to the top level and you don't finish? Come on. That just ain't right. Now, this is their metric, and I understand they get points for being a state championship game. So that's an extra 10 points on the years that they didn't win it that we didn't get, because when we go to the Dome, we win and come back with a trophy. And they come back with the other kind of trophy that's a little bit smaller and has red on it. But we're not going to talk about that. What I'm going to get into is I'm going to get into the head-to-head battles. I know Logan and I talked about last week about head-to-head with Carmel and everything like that. And really, since 2009, where they started it, we've gone 9-6 versus Carmel. We are currently on a 4-game winning streak against Carmel. We are in the postseason, okay? Postseason, 4-1, including 3 state titles in that same time frame. And 1 victory at their house in 2012, our lowest ranked season. So it's very interesting. And when I add up the records over that same time frame, I mean, they have 7 double-digit win seasons. We have 5. We have 3 state championships, like I said, in 2009, 2013, and last year, 2018. Undefeated season. They have 2 state championship seasons, but you know, they have a lot of wins over there. They have 106 wins over that time frame to 96 for us. So 10 more wins basically, and a winning percentage of 800 for them to 780 for us. But when it comes to head to head battles, I mean, we're 2-0 versus them last year, 1-0 in 2017, 1-0 in 2016. And then really, we split it just about every other year except for 2010 and 2014 and 2015. So, like, I just really want to know how the people that really wrote that and came up with that metric, when you see what we've done against them over that time frame, how can you put them ahead of us? It doesn't really make much sense to me. I mean, come on now. I mean, how can you say a team is more dominant than one team when that team has lost every state championship game they faced against them in that time frame? When you talk about 2009, you talk about what I consider to be the greatest victory in our school's history. Or you could talk about 2013, the team that was one of the more unlikely teams in our school history to win a state championship. And they won 7-6 behind a dominating defense, an unbelievable defense we had that year, led by Cottrell Moss, Max Hernandez, McKelty Williams, and other greats. So many great guys on that team, all right? Zach Gagner as well, game-winning touchdown catch, from Jeff George Jr. Or then you talk about last year and how, you know, Ramir Elliott, this, he just would not be denied. Jaden George, Montrezl Stanley came through big time making huge plays. David Bell was there, but David Bell was, you know, still getting over his injury and wasn't fully able to really ball out like he did in the first game against him. So it took the rest of the team, his teammates, to help get us over the hump. And that defense, when I talk about the defense, see, once again, you cannot make an article like this after watching that dominant of a defensive performance at that high of a level and say, well, the team that lost is still more dominant. What? Please tell me where they do that at. Please tell me where they do that at. Because not over here. All right. And I, this is no disrespect to Carmel. No disrespect at all. All right. Those guys have, they've been through some battles. Okay. They have gone through some of the best teams the state has offered. And they won a lot of great games. Like the 2011 team was really good. No other team would have beaten them except for us. And we were the only team that beat them that year. Like, no other team in the state was nearly as good. Really, in 2011, we were both 1-2 in the state. Top 15. Both of us were ranked top 15 nationally in the first matchup. And then we were both ranked in the top 10, I think, in the second matchup still. So that was a great year, tremendous year. And I wonder if we had won, really, if we had won that matchup against them, this would probably be flipped. It will, in my eyes, it will most likely be flipped the other way and we would be number one. And there'd be no discussion. And then I'll be like, oh, well. But Max Preps dropped this on Thursday and I was like, oh, man, that makes my job a whole lot easier. You know, there's a proverb that says, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Hey, thank you, Max Preps. I appreciate it. You guys have helped make this week really good. Really good. But this is only part of the controversy that I'm doing for this week, all right? And later on in this episode, I'll get into the whole meat and potatoes. But for those of you that, you know, don't follow social media and stuff like that, last week there was a big, a lot of controversy going on. If you big into hip-hop, yeah, I grew up listening to rap music, hip-hop, whatever you want to call it, you know. Parents, my father and everything, he grew up in the 80s. I came up in the 90s, okay? So I wasn't a big Tupac or Biggie fan because then I was like 6, 7, 8 years old when they were big and doing their thing. Really, it wasn't until the late 90s and onward that I really appreciate and enjoy rap music, okay? I liked artists from the South, Lil Wayne. Then I enjoyed... Jay-Z, then I eventually got into the Diplomats era. Those of you guys that know me, you guys know, okay, it was Dipset all day, every day. Huge fan of the Clips, Malice, No Malice, Pusha T, and all that stuff, you know. I could go on and on and on about lyrical wordsmiths from that time and how great they were, and there was a list that came out. I'm not sure who originally created the list, but it was the top 50 greatest rappers of all time. And you know, it had a lot of people up in arms. Like, how can you put this guy and not put this guy? How can you put this guy right here and he's better than this guy? You don't have him like that, or you completely left this guy off the list. How could you do that? But that right there, that conversation, it sparked so many people, so much controversy and people conversating about it. There were lists popping up all over the place. You had radio personalities putting out their own list. You had celebrities putting out their own list. You had even artists, rappers that were on the list themselves putting out their own list. And I was like, oh my God, this is the perfect time to do something I've really been planning for a long time. And I said to you guys last week and previously on social media, season 2 of True Warrior Football is going to be really, really good. I'm taking everything I learned from last year and incorporating it into this year. And folks, I've finally done it. I've finally come up with what I truly believe is the greatest 50 players in Warren Central football history. Now, with a program as long, as extensive as ours, we've coming up on our 82nd football year this season. Okay, 82 years our program has been around. And I've tried to go back as far as I could, get as many stats listened to or try to figure out, you know, who was the greatest from back in the day. But a lot of times when I'm researching that stuff, I'm looking at it. Maybe it's just me because I've been around the modern game era. A lot of those guys didn't make the cut. Some of them did make the cut, though. There are some guys in here that people from back in those days were like, yeah, he was really good. He was really good. And we're going to take a break here before I really dive into it and start. But I want to say this, okay? If you didn't make the list, don't feel upset. I didn't make the list either myself. I'm not going to put myself at number 50 or anything like that. If you did make the list, folks, that's okay. Because our program is just so great. Condensing it down to 50 players, there's always going to be somebody's upset. There's always, I can never make a perfect list, but what I can do is make a list of 50 of the greatest players where people can say, oh yeah, that guy right there, he deserves to be on this list. What I watched him do on Friday nights under the big lights of Warren Central, he deserves to be on this list. And so with that, ladies and gentlemen, with that being said, True Warrior Football's top 50 greatest players is coming right up.
True Warrior Football Podcast is sponsored by
Warrior Aid, made painstakingly by us, the Warriors. It will make you a winner. You'll be beating Ben Davis in no time. You might even win a state championship or two. It's good, my brothers. Drink it.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is finally time. I've been teasing this all week. I've been going over my list and like, yeah, I'm sure with it. It was like 2 days ago where I really had it to where I was really, really done with it. And a lot of people was like, well, let me hear this. Let me hear who you got right here. Who you got right here? I know you got him number one. I know you got him on there. I know you got, come on, tell me who you got. Tell me who you got. Just be patient, okay? In due time, you will hear who I consider to be the top 50 greatest players in our program's great and illustrious history. Now, let me have a little bit of criteria here about how I picked it. First of all, this is only for their time at Warren Central. I don't want to hear about, oh, well, this guy, you know, he went on and was a two-time All-American at such and such college, and he ended up going to get drafted. I understand that. He was a great player. I love him. He's down the list. For instance, Krishan Hogan. I love Krishan Hogan. I love him to death. Krishan Hogan did not have a great high school career here. Coaches will tell you that. He himself will even tell you that. I remember telling him, I never thought you would become such a great player that you became at Marion University. I love Krishan. I love what he's become as a family man. He's been a great father and role model for his kids. I love that man to death. Unfortunately, he is not on the list. And there are going to be a lot of people that will want to argue about guys that are on the list. And I'm okay with that. I am okay with that. I want this. I stand here with all the criticism. I stand on my list. Because here's something. One of the criteria, of course, is what did you do in your time here, whether it was a season or 4 years, whatever. What did you do when you strapped on that helmet and went out there on that field and performed? How great were you? Also, another thing. You know, there's also going to be guys on the assist that are going to be all MIC players, all state, all conference, all county, this all Americans, Gatorade National Player of the Years, other National Player of the Year award winners. Like, there's so many great players, Mr. Football award winners as well. That is all great as well. But one of the things I really love and that really helped me pick the right players for this list were, can the story of Warren Central football be told without mentioning your name? And I don't think so. Every single one of the 50 players on this list, they all left a lasting impact and legacy on this program that can be felt today. Each and every single one of them. Each and every single one of them, folks. So those were my big criteria here about how I picked these 50 or so names. Like I said, this episode, we're going to do the top. We're going to do 50 through 26. And then tomorrow on Friday, August 16th, I'll be doing a live show right before the Carmel scrimmage here at Warrior Stadium. And I'll go over the top 25 there. But this episode right here is just for 50 through 26. And if you aren't able to watch the live stream, I will have that be next week's episode. And we'll have a little follow-up feedback maybe in the week after that. Or maybe I'll put out a bonus episode where I have discussion with others. I'm looking forward to how people really react to this. And hopefully I inspire people to make and create their own list. And with all that being said, that's enough talk. I'm done talking. Let's get to the meat and potatoes. Let's get to True Warrior Football's top 50 greatest players of all time.
Number 50, tight end Zach Gegner.
Number 50, Zach Gegner, tight end. Gegatron is what I so lovingly call him. He was an amazing, amazing player. He, you know, I had him on the show, and really he did a lot of great things at St. Francis, but really what really made him stand out, what made me say to myself, you know, I have to have him on this list in some way. And 50 greatest players of all time, he is the first Mr. Football award-winning tight end in school history. That is huge. And really, when you score a game-winning touchdown in a state championship game, that goes a long, long way with me. And for him to do that, to step up in the biggest moment, and really the whole year, he stepped up and made big play after big play for us. And when I had him on the show, I reminded him about a play similar to that against Carmel the previous year where a pass went his way. It may have not been the greatest of passes, but the ball bounced off of his hands, off of his shoulder pads and stuff, and it ball ended up being intercepted. And that was something that he never had happened to him again. And a year later, as a senior, he makes up for it and makes the biggest play of his high school career, winning a state championship play, a state championship winning play like that. And you know what? A guy like that deserves to be on this list. So Zach Gegner, tight end, number 50.
Number 49, quarterback Jeff George Jr.
And who else better to follow up Zach at number 49? Then the quarterback that threw him that ball. That's right, quarterback Jeff George Jr. He was a player, came in as a junior, and
as a junior, he went back and forth starting time in that 2012 season with Anthony Cooper Taylor, brother of Dexter Taylor. And, you know, it wasn't always great for him. You know, it was a learning curve for him. He's come off heralded the oldest son of his legendary quarterback and Warren Central legend, Jeff George. And, you know, he had a lot of pressure on him to live up to that name. And originally, I did not know what to expect from young Jeffrey. But as his senior season came and he grew into himself more and he did more things and he continued to build on himself and really mold himself to being a player that could lead a team to a championship, that speaks volumes. It speaks volumes to a person that can come into a program where they never really were. He didn't grow up in Warren Township. He didn't go to any schools and never played youth league with any of those guys. But really, he always admired the program that his father played for growing up as a kid. And to make that game-winning touchdown pass, like I said, to Zach Gegner in the state championship game and walk off the field victorious the same way his father did in his last season here. What was that? Almost 30 years apart. That is very, very special. And once again, you lead a team to a state championship at any level, that's great. You do it at Warren Central. You do it in the MIC. You do it where you are constantly facing MIC opponents in the playoffs week in and week out. And every single week, you take their best shot and you come out victorious. You are definitely worthy of being on this list. So number 49, quarterback, Jeff George Jr.
Number 48, running back, Tristan Tonte.
Another great player, Mr. Tristan Tonte, running back. Came into the program when his father moved him and became the head wrestling coach. And really, he came in as a quarterback, but he changed and made an adjustment to his game and really being a star. He became the star running back, which is always interesting. And I hate to put this stigma on him, but, you know, when you think of a white running back, you don't think of a guy that's tough. But when you think of when you see Tristan Tonte and know who his father is and you know what he's able to do, that's quickly changed. Tristan Tonte was anything but a soft, weak, white running back. Tristan Tonte was tough as nails. Tristan Tonte would drive a guy through a brick wall if he had to, if that's what it meant getting to the end zone. And he did that over and over again his senior year in the 2016 season. He did it so much. Getting into the end zone so much, he became the very first MIC Offensive Player of the Year in school history. That is a feat I will always praise him for. He will always have my utmost respect because he came in here, once again, another guy that didn't come up in a program. He wasn't in the youth leagues growing up. He came in, bought in, and he made his own name. He didn't live off his father's legacy. He made his own name. He said, give me the ball and get out my way. Block for me while you're doing it, but get out the way. I'm coming. And he came and those guys in that season were so special. So special. And Tristan Tonte was one of the more special players on that team. So number 48 on the top 50 list, Tristan Tonte.
Hot! Number 47, quarterback Kyle Fonts.
Now, I know a lot of people may see this list and think, why do you have this guy? Why is Kyle Fonts on your list, okay? Kyle Fonts only played here 1 year, and once again, he's another player that I have in a row that didn't come up in the program, didn't come up playing youth league worn football, wasn't used to our system, and wasn't used to that worn pride. But man, when you talk about a guy that comes into a program and buys in and completely loves the black and gold, Kyle Fonts was that guy. Kyle Fonts was just an absolutely incredible, he's an absolutely incredible person. I had him on the show once already before. A great, tremendous quarterback, a guy that has great moxie. He has great leadership. He was a guy you never felt like, at least I never felt like, was going to be a person that wouldn't give everything for his teammates. There was a game where we were playing against Carmel down Lucas Oil Stadium, and you know, we had to get in field goal range for a late second field goal to win the game. And he pushed us down the field with so many touch, precise, precision passes. It was a thing of beauty. And got us right there with no time left for anything else but the perfect kick for Max Hernandez to make and execute. It was a thing of beauty. And then weeks before that, he steps up big time. Deontay Buckley, our star running back, gets hurt, knocks out the game, and Ben Davis starts to make a comeback. They're pushing on us, all right? He has a play that goes badly. Ben Davis scores a defensive touchdown off of it, and what does he turn around and do? He turns around, leads the offense back down the field, scores what would end up being the game-winning touchdown for us on the road at the Evil Empire, okay? You make plays like that. You make plays like that consistently, and you show your teammates how big of a leader you are, that right there gets you on my list. And, well, people are like, well, he didn't have great stats. Okay, he had a 667 completion percentage, all right? That's really good in my eyes. I don't care what you say. 1,700 yards passing, which were, at that time, I believe, maybe Derek Hart had thrown for that many yards, but that was a lot of yards for a Warren Central team to be passing. He had 22 touchdowns to 5 interceptions, added another 3 rushing touchdowns. But here's the most important key factor here for Kyle Fonts, another reason why I have him on the top 50 list. Kyle Fonts led one of the best offenses of the last 10 seasons here in our school's history. Our offense in 2011 averaged 43.5 points per game. There hadn't been a team to eclipse that mark until last season's team, and they had to play 2 extra games to eclipse it. That right there, ladies and gentlemen, just goes to show how great of a leader, how great of a person, and how much of a command of our offense Kyle Fonts was able to have his one season here in 2011, and that is the reason why he lands on the top 50 list.
Number 46, strong safety, Michael Tutsi.
White Lightning himself, Michael Tutsi, safety coming in at number 46. You know, I've talked to him on the show really once about his time at North Dakota State University and his being a part of 2 great national championship winning teams, but I haven't really talked about his time here at Warren Central. And really, one of the great things about doing a show, I relive great moments, and he had one of the all-time great moments and really set it up. You have to understand who he is, who he was, his father, legendary coach, former head coach Steve Tutsi, that I had on the show several times already. You know, he and Michael, thick as thieves. He coached Michael in youth leagues growing up. He helped coach Michael a little bit when he was at Creston. And then when they went to Lawrence Township Schools and he played for LC, of course, he coached Michael up through his freshman through junior years. But when there's a change. Michael said, Dad, it's time for me to come home. It's time for me to come home. And I did not know how well he would fit in with our guys because he had been gone for 3 years. I mean, LC was the enemy, but he fit in perfectly, more than I could have ever imagined. And really, in the very first game, Michael made a play that every father would love to see their son make if they're playing at his position. He perfectly reads the ball. We're playing at Center Grove to start the season. Perfectly reads the ball. Quarterback throws it. He picks it off and takes it 30, 40 yards for a game-sealing touchdown late in the fourth quarter. And there's this epic, epic picture that you see Michael running past Coach Tutsi, and Coach Tutsi is celebrating with his hand in the air, his fist pumping, and it's just such a great picture. I think it's one of the four or five greatest pictures ever taken of a moment in Warren Central football history. It is truly a wonderful moment, and Michael was making plays like this at the safety position all year long. He and Dijon Anderson, I've said this before, they were one of the all-time great free safety or safety combos, free safety duos that we've had in school history. And, you know, Michael was a two-time all-conference player, both at Warren and LC, but let's talk about his Warren time. First-team all-county player, all-state player as well. Had over 75 tackles, 11 tackles for a loss, 2 forced fumbles, 5 fumble recoveries, 5 interceptions during his senior year, and as well as 1 block punt and 2 defensive touchdowns. He really did something that I thought was crazy when I was sitting there at his games and watching him. He had a turnover in 7 consecutive games. Now people may think, oh, well, that's not hard to do. It is very hard to do, especially people when you get good. You know, sometimes at his position, quarterbacks don't tend to throw in your direction. So with Michael, he was always putting himself in the right position each and every game. He reminded me like another guy on this list here that we'll talk about eventually. He wore the number 9 and he played the game like he had always wanted to play when he sat and watched that guy play on the field. He was all over the place making plays. He would run down, strip a player, get the ball back for the offense, and let them do their thing. And, man, he was truly a great player. You know, people may think I'm a little biased because I consider Michael my brother, but you know what? Michael was a true great player for our program. Even if it was for just one season, he's definitely worthy of being on this list. And with that, he comes in at number 46.
Number 45, quarterback and tight end, Jamie Asher.
Next up, Mr. Asher, Jamie Asher. And for people, a lot of people don't know about a lot of those guys in the mid-80s to 90s, early 2000s era. Those guys have been lost to this. You know, nobody talks about them nearly as much as they should. And Jamie Asher, unfortunately, is one of those guys that doesn't get the love that he and credit that he rightfully deserves nowadays. Jamie Asher was he was a quarterback, tight end. He was an offensive weapon for our team. Probably the best offensive player in the immediate 5 years after Jeff George graduated and went on to college. He was a guy that, you know, Coach Shelbourne and Coach Willen, when he was a head coach for a season, they used him heavily. They used him heavily, and, you know, he did some great things on the field. I was always told by Mr. Burchett and other coaches that were around during the time that Jamie Asher was one of the most athletically gifted players they had ever seen. When he was on the field, and really the University of Louisville came calling. And that was a big time program back in the early 90s when he went there and played, and he would end up being drafted. But, you know, a guy like Jamie Asher, I don't think I can tell the great story of Warren Central's football program by leaving a guy like him off of it. I just truly don't feel like I can. And that is the reason why he lands on my list at number 45.
Number 44, defensive lineman, kicker, and linebacker, Max Hernandez.
Max Hernandez. You know, when I had Max on the show during the season, you know, he really, you know, bringing up great memories of his time here. He was like that old throwback player, you know, a guy that could put his hand in the dirt and play defensive line, a guy that can help you block, a guy that could stand up and play linebacker if you needed him, and a guy that could, need be, kick for you. And really, he had some huge, huge moments. I could think of two, maybe three games that he won with his leg alone. The state championship game, the 2013 state championship game, as well as a victory over Pike on the road at Pike that same playoff season. I want to say that was a regional game. And his sophomore season, he was called up into duty as a, and now imagine yourself, a young 15, 16 year old sophomore. You know, you've been kicking, but you haven't really been, you know, put into a lot of high intensity moments where you had to make the kick, you had to make the big play of the game. And he got called up and he did it. He split the uprights in that 2011 game against Carmel down at Lucas Oil Stadium, and really we erupted and celebrated and cheered for him and rushed the field. And there's a great picture of him and Coach Wilman hugging each other and crying, and it was such a great moment. And Max was, he was truly a great player that a lot of people have to understand. Of course, All-Mic player. He was a great wrestler, but just being a football player, he was All-Mic, All-State guy. And here's a crazy stat that a lot of people will never know about if you never saw and watched him play. Max was, and it was the 2013 Carmel game. We're at Carmel on the road, and Carmel has always been a tough place to play for us. And he's in there. He's playing defensive line and linebacker, of course. And in this game, he has a touchdown. He has a safety. He's kicker, so he's kicking all of those PATs, and he's kicking field goals for us as well. I want to say he had between 15 and 16 total points for us that entire game, which were all the points we scored. It was a close match that we ended up losing, but it was such an incredible performance. I had never seen anything like that. I've seen guys like Darren Evans have six touchdown games. I've seen guys like Ramir Elliott, you know, rush for 300, 400 yards in the game before, you know, something like that. But those guys are skill guys. That's what those guys are supposed to do. A player like Max Hernandez should not have been able to do the things that he was doing. But Max Hernandez didn't know no better. Max Hernandez didn't care about that. Max Hernandez played for the team. He played for his brothers beside him in the dirt. He gave it his all, his absolute all. And that's the reason why they were able to walk off that field in 2013 victorious and state champions. Once again, folks, you cannot tell the history of this great program without talking about a player like Max Hernandez. That's the reason why he comes in high on our list at number 44.
Number 43, running back and linebacker, Stephen Willis.
Next up on our list, a guy that people, you know, if you weren't around the team 15, 16 years ago when we were making our run in 2003, you wouldn't know who this guy was. You wouldn't understand how important he was, but Stephen Willis was truly, truly important. As a junior, he was part of a school record 4 1,000 repeat, let me repeat that, folks. 4 1,000-yard rushers. First time that had ever been accomplished in school history. Four individual guys rushing for 1,000 yards. It was him, Desmond Tardy, Mark Bynes, and I believe it was Aaron Lacy. Yes, Aaron Lacy. And those guys were, it was the greatest show I had ever seen. It was a unit, an offense and unit that made me fall in love with Warren Central football during the 2002 season. And when we didn't come all the way through at the end there, Coach Tutsi, he always says, the first person I came to after we lost that game to Ben Davis, I went and found Steven Wilson and said, I need you to be on the defense with me, and this will never happen to you again. You'll never feel this pain. You and your teammates will never feel like this again. You come over here to the dark side with me, and we will win a state championship next year. And sure enough, he came over to the defensive side. He came over, and he helped wreak havoc, being a crucial, crucial player on one of the best defenses in our school's vaunted, legendary defensive history. He helped really solidify several key wins in the playoffs, including a game-breaking interception against Ben Davis that he returned for a touchdown in the regional games. You know, you can say, well, there was other guys in it that had great performances in that game. Yes, but they weren't Steven Willis. They were not Steven Willis, and Steven Willis had all the heart. He's the first person in school history to rush for 1,000 yards on offense in one season and be an all-conference defensive player the next season. That's incredible. That is absolutely incredible. Just think about that, folks. Think about how hard that is to do. And with that, Steven Willis comes in at my list right here. Linebacker number 43.
Number 42, linebacker Cottrell Moss.
Mr. Moss, Cottrell Moss coming in at number 42. And he was... oh, my God, man, this guy. I remember texting another guy that's on our list later and saying, this guy reminds me exactly like you. He is hard-hitting. He is everywhere. He's fast. He's making plays literally all over the field. All-MIC player, all-state player. During his senior season in 2013, he had over 110 total tackles, okay? 57 of those were solo stops, 10.5 tackles for loss. He had a pair of interceptions as a junior that were returned for over 20 yards, and one of them was, I want to say, a 30-plus yard touchdown interception, interception return for a touchdown against North Central on the road. This guy was absolutely a monster. He was a true monster. One of the last people I like to call the last of the blood belts, the Tussie train guys, on the 2013 defense. He was absolutely incredible, man. When you sat there and watched him during that season, you're like, oh my God, I'm looking at one of the greatest linebackers of all time. And with his play on the field, he couldn't be denied. He absolutely couldn't be denied, and that is the reason why he comes in on this list at number 42.
Hot! Number 41, wide receiver Lance Shibe.
The next legend on the list, Lance Shibe, legendary wide receiver from the 1984 season. Lance was Jeff George's standout star wide receiver, and really, he just built up on his entire career. He ended up being a star wide receiver for Purdue after he left Warren Central. But one thing I think is still really cool about him in the 35 years, excuse me, since they won their state championship game. He still has a school record for most receiving touchdowns in a state championship game, a game where we won 28 to 8, excuse me, against Hobart in the 1984 state championship game. Lance Shive had 6 catches for 94 yards and 3 touchdowns. That is still a school record for touchdowns, receptions in a game. He was an incredible wide receiver. I wish I had more stats to share with you guys, but stats from back in the 80s are a little bit hard to find and stuff, but I know he was an All-State player for sure. North-South All-Star Game recipient, which was back in that time, being a part of the North-South All-Stars was a huge, huge event. It's lost its luster over the last few years now with early enrollment guys going to college sooner rather than in August and stuff like that. But, you know, he in his time was one of the great wide receivers in Central Indiana and really in the state of Indiana. So number 41, Lance Shive.
Number 40, linebacker Jamie Arnold.
Jamie Arnold coming in at number 40 is very fitting. He is a guy, one of the greatest linebackers. You'll see I have a lot of linebackers on this list because we've had truly a ton of great linebackers in our school history. And Jamie Arnold being the star standout leader and a linebacker of the 2006 team, really, you know, he had a legacy to uphold. He was coming behind Chris Graham and Andre Hatchett and Andre Nicholson, guys that I'm going to be talking about later here on the list. And he really set the tone all season and was a guy that you didn't want to come across him in the middle. And a lot of teams found that out the hard way. A lot of players on our opposing teams ended up having to be carted off because of Jamie Arnold. Jamie Arnold was a dog. Jamie Arnold was a monster in the middle. He hit you and you did not want to get up. You really wanted the game to be over. He was tough. He made plays all over the field. He was an all-conference player, all-state player, all-county player. That's a tremendous, tremendous athlete and all-around great linebacker for us. And he comes in on the True Warrior Football Top 50 list at number 40.
Number 39, offensive lineman Deshaun Bond.
Coming in at number 39, Deshaun Bond. And Deshaun, as an offensive lineman, he had all the tools. He had all the tools. He was smart. He was powerful. He was quick. He knew the offense. He knew exactly where every play was supposed to go. He was a guy, senior leadership, that our team in 2011 and really 2010 as well, you know, he helped really punish our opponents in the trenches. You know, they say the fight always starts up front, and really Deshaun was one of those guys that really helped set the tone each and every time he stepped on the field. And he was an all-county player, all-MIC player as well, part of the Indianapolis Super Team. And, you know, he was just a guy that was truly nasty. One of the great offensive linemen, the first offensive lineman I've gotten to on the list so far, one of the top 50 on the top 50 list here so far. And you know what? He's definitely worthy of being it. He was nasty. He was a monster. And once again, like I said with Kyle Fonts, and like I'll say again with other guys that are part of that 2011 team, I truly, truly wish they would have been successful at the very end there to really be seen and considered as great as they were. But really, no matter what they did, they were still truly great players, and that is the reason why Deshaun Bond makes it at the list on number 39.
Number 38, defensive lineman Jeff Boyd.
Coming in at number 38, Jeff Boyd. Jeff Boyd is a defensive lineman that was just incredible. Absolutely incredible. An all-state, all-mic, all-county player. Of course, he was a key defensive player and figure on the 2006 state championship team. One of the greatest defenses in the state, in the history of the state, because it was awarded by Indy Star the greatest team of all time. And those guys on that defensive line, oh my God, they were monsters. And Jeff Boyd was a key figure of that defensive line. He had a school record 18 tackles for loss for over what they believe is like 50 yards or something like that. That's an incredible number. 58 total tackles, 39 of those being solo, 9 sacks during his senior year. And as a junior, he had another 8 sacks as well. Just an incredible, incredible player for us. He, you know, when you always want to establish the run if you're an offense, but when you have an opponent that has a guy that's Jeff Boyd and he's locking down 2 or 3 all of your offensive linemen or beating them straight out the ball and getting it to the quarterback before he can hand the ball to the running back, that's a problem. And Jeff Boyd was a guy that did that time and time again. One truly, truly one of the greatest defensive line players we've ever had in school history. And he comes in on the list at number 38.
Number 37, linebacker Andre Nicholson.
Next up on the list here, a guy very many wouldn't even heard of, but Andre Nicholson at number 37 is, you know, like I said earlier in the list, there have been a lot of great players come through the program that only unfortunately played one season. And Andre Nicholson is definitely that person. And now when I see the number 3, that's a huge number for Deshaun Anderson. And I've already talked about a lot about his story and what he means to a lot of our kids and the program and people all over. But Andre Nicholson was really the first person in school history where we tributed a game for him and the number 3 to him. You see, Andre Nicholson was a guy, he transferred in from, I believe it was either Mount Vernon or New Pal, and he had came up in the township, but then he moved away and then he came back for his junior season. And his junior season, he, along with Andre Hatchett, formed probably the most vicious and terrorizing linebacking core in school history. In 2005, those guys were making plays literally everywhere on the field and especially in the backfield, meeting at the quarterback every single game. Those guys were fast and quick, and Andre really surprised everybody when he was put on special teams against a game. I think it was a game against Center Grove, and he ended up taking an opening kickoff against Center Grove at home, 98 yards for a touchdown, right up the middle, right up the sideline of Center Grove, and it was almost an untouched. He went up the field almost untouched. It was really incredible. And that helped spur our team to victory. I think it was like 68-10 or 68-13. It was a huge victory for us. And the next or 2 weeks later, he would be taken away and made the star running back because Darren Evans had to be out of town that week. And he just had an incredible, incredible game. he rushed for over 200 yards, and I think he had two touchdowns. But even though we lost that game, he still showed that, you know, he was willing to do whatever it meant for the team to win. And that tenacity of his never gave up. He showed it again against Lawrence North in the sectional championship. He showed it again against Decatur Central in the regional championship. And finally, in the Avon game, which was a semi-state championship game, he, I want to say it was somewhere in the middle game, he suffered a neck injury on an interception return of his. Not of his, but of ours. And he was blocking, and he got blindsided by somebody, and he's down on the field. And it's still tough to talk about because I still vividly remember it, but that play would end up being the last time he played football for us. And the neck injury was so severe, he had to retire right then and there from playing football ever again. And the tears and the emotion that we all had for a guy that was giving his all for us all season like that, and really being there for the team and really trying to help us win another third consecutive state championship. You know, we were all overcome by tears. And during that state championship game, we all wrote the number 3 on our arms and wrote them on our passes. You know, we just made it know, we wanted it to be known that we were all there for him. And when we won, we ended up carrying him off the field on our shoulders, man, and holding him up high to let him know that, we all here for you. We all got you, man. And that's right there, you know, his spirit. And he's still around, and I still see him around. He came to a game last season, and, you know, he always wishes he could get back out there and play. And he just, God, man, he was truly, truly a great player. And just talking about him and what he meant to me as well as our teammates and team, there's this it, I can't say enough about him, man. He was truly a special player, and he definitely is more than worthy of being on the list, and that is the reason why I have him at number 37.
Number 36, wide receiver Maurice McGee.
The person with the greatest catch in school history. Maurice McGee at number 36, one of the all-time greatest wide receivers in school history, right there at the time where we were going from a really run heavy offense to a pass heavy offense now. And Mo, that year, I knew when he started working with former Warrior legend Kyle Wimberly, and they were doing some things, and Kyle was showing them how, you know, footsteps and routes and, you know, how to come out your breaks the proper way and stuff like that. I knew Mo was going to be a special player because I knew Kyle was a special player, and Kyle has showed that during his time in the program. But Mo really outdid himself, and he played at a level that I had wished he would play at and higher. He exceeded all my expectations, and leading up to that final game at Lucas Oil, where, you know, the ball kept coming his way and he never gave up. And finally he catches the ball and he lands out of bounds, but it gives him the touchdown. Well, the ref gives him the touchdown. And you know what? That was a heck of a play. And that's, even though he made a whole lot of he made a lot of great touchdowns where he landed inbounds, excuse me, but that one right there was just, there's never been a bigger singular play in Warren Central High School football history than Maurice McGee catching that ball the way and in the point of the game where he did. And for that, Mo, an all-state, all-conference player, makes a list at number 36.
Number 35, defensive back James Manuel.
Coming in, banjo, banjo, banjo. James Manuel, number 35. That's an all-around tremendous, tremendous defensive player for us. Played defensive back. Played a little safety, too, at times. James was just truly phenomenal. You know, he would end up going on to have a great career at Minnesota, but it was his play, of course, here, especially during his senior season, that really, really showed why he should be on this list. He had over 100 tackles as a senior, that was all over the place, making all kinds of plays. I remember coming up with a huge interception. I believe it was against Brownsburg. Yes, it was Brownsburg on the road, and that was regional championship in 2009, 10 years ago now. And he just made plays like that all over. Lockdown guy. A lot of times he was big, lengthy, very athletic. You know, anytime you asked him to do something, he would always have a funny comeback to it. And it was always a great player to be around, great person to be around, you know. And he was definitely a leader on the defense and a player that, you know, couldn't be denied making this list. So he comes in at number 35.
Number 34, center Michael Gegner.
Michael Gegner is coming up next on the list at number 33. And Michael Gegner is the second of two Gegners that I have on the top 50 list. And you know what? He was a really, really special offensive line player for us. He was a runner-up in the offensive line award for Mr. Football. He was a all-mixed selection, 3-year varsity starter for us, which is, you know, if you have an offensive lineman starts 3 consecutive years, that's truly, truly something special. Helped lead an offense that tallied over 4,000 total yards, including over 3,000 yards rushing due to Shakir Bell. A truly, truly special player. Was part of the Indianapolis Star Super Team as well. An all-county selection, all-state selection. He was a guy, a hog, as they say. As Coach Barclay talks about his guys, you know, the hogs. He has told me there was a lot of offensive linemen he coached on. He coached up. He always knew Michael Gegner was going to be one of the smartest guys in game and one of the toughest guys in game as well. He never had to worry about him at the center position. And with that, Michael Gegner comes in at number 34.
Number 33, free safety, Dijon Anderson.
Coming in at number 33, a special player that everybody around here knows and loves and still remembers to this day. The number 3 will forever be synonymous with this gentleman. Dijon Anderson was just a really, really special player for our team. He had over 14 interceptions in his final 3 years. He was the first MIC player of the year, defensive player of the year, in school history. And was also the team special teams player of the year during his senior season. He was, of course, an all-MIC player, all-state player, was selected to the USA Central Indiana Super Team by the Indianapolis Star. He was just a really, really great player. And man, I wish I was not talking about him in this way to where we all really wish he had lived and was around some more, because I would just love to sit down and talk to him about his time as a Warren Central football player and what he remembers most. But Dijon was him and Michael Tutsey. Like I said before, when I introduced Michael on this list, they form what I still feel is the best safety combo in school history. They were making plays all over the field, each and every single game. they never gave up on a play. They were always there for their teammates, and a lot of that was Dijon right there in his spirit, his never give up spirit, his fight, his hunger, his tenacity to be there to make every single play. Dijon was truly a special player, and having him, I knew when I made this list, it was a must that I have him on here. And really, I did not know exactly where, but you know, having him at number 33 right now, I think that's so fitting, because I stumbled across a picture of him and his mother walking out on senior day, and they're both wearing the number 3 jersey. And it's like, man, that is just a really special sign right there. And Dijon, we miss you. We love you. I've tributed an episode to you already. We'll never forget you, my friend. We'll never forget you. And with that, you land at number 33 on a True Warrior Football top 50 players of all time.
Number 32, linebacker Jeff Massey.
You guys heard him on the show when I had him on the show originally. This was back in April, I believe. But Coach Jeff Massey, or shall I say linebacker Jeff Massey, coming in at number 32. He was a player on the 1984 and 1985 teams that really, you know, I could probably truly say this. He was the first great Warren Central linebacker in school history. You know, this guy, this going back, like you say, he was the only returning starter on the 1985 team. When I go back and look at what he did in 1984 season, just a brief glimpse of what he did as a junior in the state championship game, he had 8 tackles and 1 interception as a junior. At the highest level, he led the team in tackles, or second in the team on tackles, excuse me, and he had a crucial interception in the game. Now, that may not seem a lot to you, but let me tell you this. Sometimes when you aren't ready to step up to big time and make those big plays, you fold. People do it all the time. Freshmen do it if they're caught up upon. Seniors do it as well. And this guy, being at the highest level as a junior, okay, stepping up, and he would go on to be an all-state, all-county player at linebacker for us as well, at following his junior and senior seasons. But you know what? He was just a truly incredible player, and it is my honor to have him on the list right here at number 32.
Number 31, free safety, Justin Berrio.
Another great, great player in our school's long history. Justin Berrio at number 31. It may be a controversial pick. A lot of people will think he should be higher, and by most accounts, for most programs, he really would be. Justin was, of course, a 3-sport player, multiple varsity letter winner, but he was an exceptional talent for us on the football field, especially on the defensive side of the ball. During his senior season, he had, what was it here? He had 91 solo tackles, 11 assists, 4 interceptions, and 1 fumble recovery as a senior, had over 200 solo tackles. He also played a lot on the offense. He finished his career with over 700 yards and receiving and 7 touchdowns. It was an outstanding, outstanding player. 2-time All-Mid Conference selection, 2-time All-County player. Was also the Indianapolis Star Marion County Player of the Year in 1999 and the 2000 seasons. It's an absolutely phenomenal player, and I really wish he had more team success during that period, because this is during the years right before Coach Wright took over, and where the program just wasn't quite what it should have been. And, you know, unfortunately, that suffers. I mean, he has to suffer a little bit because of that, but you know what? He was still a very great player for us. I was always told that he was one of the more athletic players to ever come through the hallways of Warren Central. So with that being said, Justin Berrio, number 31.
Number 30, defensive back Jason Stewart.
You know, sometimes players, they won't get the due credit that they deserve. And a lot of times that happens far too often. But with this guy, I knew when I made this list that I would find myself putting him on here because I just could not deny having him on there. He is defensive back, number 10, Jason Stewart, coming in at number 30. Jay Stu, you talk about, well, why do you have him one number above Justin Berrio? Well, here's the reason why. Because Jay Stu made huge game-breaking plays for us. In the 2004 season, there are three guys that if we don't have those guys during that season, we do not win. And that is so critical. If we do not have a guy like Jason Stewart being everywhere, being such a great defensive back that he was, we just don't get to where we are celebrating like we are at the end of the season. Jason Stewart, during his senior season in 2004, he had 52 solo tackles, 22 assisted, 3 tackles for loss, 5 interceptions, 1 touchdown, 1 pass breakup that he had. But you know what? He was a guy, not a lot of people passed his way. Once he had all those interceptions, guys were like, okay, we're going to stay away from him. We're going to stay away from number 10. We're going to throw at number 1, Anthony Vaden, a lot more. And Anthony Vaden was still breaking up a lot of passes, getting interceptions and key stuff like that. But really, Jay Stu, I talked about his great play in the first game against Ben Davis, where it looked like the ball was going over Jeremy Finch's head, and he ends up waving his hand and still somehow miraculously catches the ball. The Ben Davis defenders that were around him fall down, and he sprints the remainder of the way holding up the one as he's going into the end zone. It was the greatest play I've ever seen in my entire life at that time. It was truly spectacular. The entire crowd erupted at Warrior Stadium. It was nothing anybody has ever seen before or since, okay? He had a crucial game-saving interception in the sectional opener against, North Central. And he had an even bigger interception that really sealed the victory against Ben Davis and a remarkable comeback when in the 2004 regional championship game. Jason Stewart was a guy that when you needed a big play, he was there to make a big play. And that is the reason why I have him above Justin Berrio at number 30 on the Warren Central Top 50, the True Warrior Football Top 50 Greatest Warren Central Players of All Time. So Jason Stewart, number 30. There you go.
Number 29, quarterback Derek Hart.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Derek Hart coming in at number 29. Now, a lot of people are going to say, how could you put this guy on the list? How could you do that, Corey? He was horrible as a quarterback. He couldn't do this. He couldn't do that. That family was terrible. You shouldn't have any of them anymore, anything to do with the Hart family. You know what? You're wrong. You are absolutely wrong. Derek Hart, single-handedly, but he won the greatest game in school history. End of discussion. Absolute end of discussion. Now, Was he the greatest pure passer? No, he wasn't. He'll tell you that he wasn't. Did he have his faults? Absolutely. Every player that plays sport, game of football, game of basketball, anything, we all have our faults. I have my faults, and I've never played. I haven't played a sport in years. Derek Hart, just like his last name, he had heart. He had all the heart you could ever want from a guy at that position. Let me tell you this, folks. Okay, I know I'm gonna catch flack for putting him on there, but I did it anyway because I cannot tell the story of Warren Central history, of Warren Central football history, without telling the story of the 2009 state championship game. And for those that do not know, pitchers, okay, our offense just threw an interception. Derek Hart just threw an interception. The defense has to come up with a huge, huge stop. It's late in the fourth quarter. If the defense does not get a stop, the game is over. We lose the state championship game. Defense gets a stop. Carmel punts. And we end up having to go 80-plus yards down the field without our star running back, Shakir Bell, for the entirety of that drive. We have one or two timeouts, and all the pressure is on us. Carmel's sideline, their fans are going crazy. Our sideline is silent as a grave. The pressure was all on Derek Hart to do something no one had done since Dexter Taylor in 2004 and make a huge come from behind playoff victory. No one had done that until Derek did it on this night, on this drive. The promise, our team motto from our last loss against Carmel to now, had been the promise. For those that do not know what the promise was, when we lost our last game to Carmel that season, Coach Hart came up with the promise that every player on the team, you know, they had to promise, all right? It was, you will never see a team play harder than we will the rest of the season. Short, sweet, simple. The 2009 team, it all came down to this one last drive. Derek Hart took it upon himself to not let his team down. I can't stress that enough. We went 8 for 8 on fourth down on that drive. The final play, I already talked about Maurice McGee. The ball wasn't even supposed to go his way, but he had no other choice but to throw it his way because there was a player staring him down, coming right into his face. He tosses the ball where he feels like Maurice, like Mo is going to be at, and Mo makes a miraculous catch. The referee gives him the touchdown. We're still down 2 points. What does Derek Hart do? He execute the most perfect 2-point conversion in school history to tight end Juwan Keys. And here we go. Game's tied up 28-28, and we're going into overtime. And Derek, he leads us. He gets us the ball, and he, in double overtime, he he calls his own number, and he dives into the end zone. We win. We rush the field. It's the greatest feeling ever. And I knew that was such a sweet moment for him to do that for his school, to do that for his teammates, but most importantly, to do it for his father, to do it for his brother, who was also a coach on the team. Those are huge moments that you always want to as a father, you always want to look up like, man, my son did that. But as a coach, it had to have been even sweeter. And I know it was a sweet moment for him. That was the greatest victory in school history, ladies and gentlemen. I cannot stress that enough. I'll always say that there's never been a game in state history to go to two overtimes except that one. And when we were down, he didn't give up. He led our team. And because of that, we have the ring that those guys on the north side do not have. And that is the reason why Derek Hart comes in my list at number 29.
Number 28, linebacker Tim Kimbrough Jr.
Big time Timmy. Tim Kimbrough Jr. coming in at number 28. And he is, one of the all-time greats. He was one of the few players in school and state history to finish runner-up at Mr. Football, the overall Mr. Football, without actually winning any of the Mr. Footballs. I believe we have two of those guys with Tim Kimbrough and Shakir Bell. Both of those guys were runner-up for the overall Mr. Football award, but they didn't even win the award for their position. Shakir Bell didn't win it for running back, and Tim Kimbrough, unfortunately, didn't win it for linebacker as he just missed out on it by Jalen Smith, who would end up going to Notre Dame and being a great player for them and eventually got drafted by the Cowboys. But Tim Kimbrough was a phenomenal, phenomenal linebacker. One of the hardest hitting linebackers in school history. Coaches have said they've never seen a guy that strike like him. You know, when Mark Richt, who was at the time the head coach of the University of Georgia, you know, he said to us, I don't need to come all the way up here to get a linebacker. I can get linebackers anywhere in Georgia, Florida, Alabama, all over. But I'm coming up here to get Tim Kimbrough because he's the best striker I've ever seen on film. I have to have a guy like Tim Kimbrough. And that was exactly what Tim Kimbrough was for us. He was an all-MIC player, all-state player, one of the top three position players in the entire state of Indiana, not just at his position, one of the top three overall players in the state of Indiana. He had over 120 total tackles his senior season. He had well over 200 following his sophomore, junior, and senior seasons. Just an incredible, incredible player. You know, his senior season didn't really go well like he had wanted to, but he was a part of an incredible, incredible come-from-behind victory at Carmel in a 2012 sectional opener. And just he was making plays all over the place in that game and really helped make the final defensive play that ended up winning us the game in triple overtime. And Tim Kimbrough is one of the three or four greatest linebackers in school history. I can't think of too many better linebackers, pure linebackers in school history other than Tim Kimbrough. And that is the reason why I have him on the True Warrior Football Top 50 list coming in at number 28.
Number 27, quarterback Matt Upshaw.
If you do not know who Matt Upshaw is, let me just say, he is probably one of the few quarterbacks, not just in school history, but in state history, that can say, no matter what game I started, I never lost. You see, ladies and gentlemen, Matt was the starting quarterback on the 2006 state championship team. But he was also the backup quarterback to Dexter Taylor in 2004 and 2005 when he was a sophomore and junior. And on three separate occasions when Dexter was not able to play or finish a game, Matt Upshaw stepped up and made big-time plays and led our team to victory as a starter. With a starting record of, I believe it was 18 or 19 and 0. I believe it was 18 and 0. That is the most games anybody has ever started without losing a single game. Jeff George can't say that. Jaden George can't say that. Dexter Taylor, Desmond Tardy, none of those guys can say that. Matt Upshaw is the only guy in school history and possibly state history that can say that. Now, people may say, well, he was, you know, it's easy to have a guy that can just, you know, hand the ball off to Darren Evans every single play or Jewel Hampton every single play, you know. But, guys, you got to understand, when you are the main guy, when you are the starting quarterback, everything falls on you. You are the one that touches the ball every single play. You are the one your teammates are depending on to help get them down the field and put the ball in the end zone. A lot of people don't understand that, or a lot of people just don't get it, okay? Matt Upshaw was not a game manager. Matt Upshaw was a guy that our coaches knew they could depend on to make the right read and the right call to lead us to victory. He did that time and time again. He did that in big game moments against Ben Davis, against Carmel, and again against Carmel in the regular season, and against Carmel again in the state championship game, where he rolled out and basically jogged into the end zone for the opening touchdown for us. Matt Upshaw was definitely a key player for our school and our program. And not having him on the list would be a travesty. An absolute travesty. And that is why I have him where I have him right now at number 27. He's just too big of a big-time player for us not to have on. He wasn't flashy. He didn't run up and down the field like Desmond Tardy or Dexter Taylor. He didn't pass the ball a lot like we have quarterbacks now, like we just had Jaden George or Zach Sumeyer before him or Kyle Fonts. But he was just a gamer, as Coach Tussie would say. He was just a guy that you get in, you put in, and get out of his way. You call up the right play for him, and he'll execute it. And he'll make the best read for our team. And that was exactly what Matt Upshaw did during his entire career here at Warren Central. So Matt Upshaw, once again, number 27.
Number 26, linebacker Nick Temple.
Nick Temple at number 26. Wow. You know, for a player to really follow in the footsteps of so many great linebackers in school history. I've already talked about a few of them here on this list so far. Nick Temple will become just the second Mr. Football position award winner at linebacker in school history behind Chris Graham. And that right there in and of itself is just amazing. He was an All-State Class 5A All-State selection, an All-Mixed selection, of course, and he was rated the top linebacker in his position in the state of Indiana when he graduated in 2010, and he was just incredible for us. As a leader on the 2009 state championship team as a junior, he was all over the place, making plays left, right. You know, he never gave up. Never, not once did Coach Tutsie or any of our linebacker coaches ever have to worry about Nick Temple not being there to make a play. He had 59 tackles, 59 total tackles and 4 sacks, 4 passes defended, as well as 2 fumbles and a pair of touchdowns during his senior season, excuse me. He registered over 130 tackles, as well as 12 tackles for loss, 9 sacks, and 1 interception. Nick Temple was just a guy that was all over the place. He was a great leader, a tremendous teammate, and he, you know, he didn't give up. He didn't give up. He was a vocal leader that every coach wants your star linebacker to be. And coming in at number 26, and the last person on the list I want to talk about here, Nick Temple.
Woo! Man, what a journey. What a incredible first half of this list that this episode has been. Those guys, I love and respect each and every single one of you guys to death. The ones that I do know, the ones I don't know, and just pay respect and homage to, like Mr. Asher. You know, I hope somebody sends you this and lets you know that we still respect and admire you for what you did during your time in the program. And, you know, you're always welcome back here on the Far East Side to a game to sit down and talk with me or to anybody else, man. Please come back to the program and share your memories of what all happened for you here in the program. And before I get out of here, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to thank you all for just listening to me constantly. I know I said that on the last week's show, but I just got notified that this is the 1 year anniversary of the first episode I dropped last year, which is just an incredible milestone for me. I can't believe that we've made it this far, that I've been able to continue to build on the show, learn so many great things, interview so many great players, coaches, fans, talk to so many people that love what I'm doing for our program. For everybody that listens, I thank you. I couldn't have got here without you guys. For all the players that listen, this is my gift to you guys. You guys have gifted me with so many memories, and this is me paying homage to you guys. As I've always said before, I don't do this show for myself. I do it for you guys, so nobody will forget how great of a person and player you guys were for us. And with all that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm your host, Corey Kidd Smith. Tune in tomorrow. Live stream is going to be on Twitter and Facebook Live from the True Warrior Football Facebook and Twitter pages. Hey, Warrior Band, take us away.